Hari Om Sahana Bhavatu Sahana Bhunaktu Saha Viryam Karavavahai Tejasvi Navadhitamastu Ma Vishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sadigaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Okay. So page 60. Some other philosophers say this material world is born from the soul's thoughts. In truth, the individual soul is not different from God. The individual soul is himself, the God of all gods, right? They just take it one step at a time. You know? Yeah, so you get this kind of strange stepping thing. It's from the thoughts of the individual. But there's a difference in whether the thoughts are what turns it from being dealing with internal potency to external potency, then that you can say that material world, in other words, the material concept comes from the soul's thoughts, right? Because you see an object of the Lord's creation, and if you think this is for my enjoyment, that makes it turns. Then its effect that will have on the consciousness of the soul is material. So in that way, you can say the material world is the cause, is born from the soul's thoughts. Well, if the soul thinks of it in relationship to the Lord, then you're dealing with the spiritual world, right? But the point is that it's not that the living entity is the controller. The living entity is simply it's how he perceives it. The energy is still the Lord's energy, controlled by the Lord, and for the Lord's purpose. Right, so it's not that, well, yeah, I make it this, I make it that. No, it's not a matter of that. It's a matter of, does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's just like, well, you know, I could either pay for it or I could steal it. So I'm the one who makes it good or bad. I'm the, you know, like this. No, it's just a matter of good and bad's already there. It's just a matter of what you choose. So it's not that I look at the material world's material, therefore now the whole thing becomes material.
Mm-hmm.
No, it's that. It's just your choice in how you want to look at something that's already there, right? What's already there already has rules. It already has laws. It already has a lawmaker. It already has everything. So it's not that we're creating anything. So here they'll say is that we're even creating it from our thoughts, because we're talking about the impersonal. So this would be part of the Vivartavad, is that we're creating this. Right, so it's worth thinking this, but the problem is that, okay, you want to say you're thinking this, you know, and therefore, you know, we're non-different from God, therefore I am the God of gods, because I'm the one who's creating this.
Mm-hmm.
It's still all false ego, because if we look at it, okay, you're creating this because you're looking at it separately from Brahman, you know, as God, therefore it's there, but the problem is it's that illusion that is, you know, covering Brahman. Then you have the jiva, according to their philosophy. When
mm-hmm.
Brahman is covered,
mm-hmm.
that therefore that portion of Brahman that's covered thinks that it's separate. You know, like you take a pot, and that amount of air that's in the pot now thinks, I am separate from all the air.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, it sounds great, but does the air actually think like that? You know, does the water think like that? No, it's just water in a pot or air in a pot. You know, so this idea that now it has changed and therefore it's transformed. You know, so that's the difficulty, is that then, you know, Brahman is even there, because even in the Vaivartavad, where they're trying to solve the problem that Brahman is unchangeable, but the point is this illusion has covered Brahman, that means Brahman is able to be an illusion. That's still a change right there. It's still a transformation, because now you've transformed from Supreme Brahman, or just Brahman, because as later it'll be pointed out, from Brahman into Jiva Brahman. Right? And this Jiva that is covered by this illusion thinks that it's there. Right? But that's then you're taking there. The other is, the other problem is that the Jiva, he's thinking that it's from illusion, but he had the illusion, so he creates the illusion, but how does the illusion then cover him? Right? And if the illusion was there first when it's Brahman, then how is Brahman covered by illusion? You know what I'm saying? So it still will have problems or philosophies. Because in other words, someone takes a line of reasoning up to the point where it matches your identity. Right? Because that's the final thing before doing something, is the reasoning is then the last stage, is it's flavored by identity. So when it gets to the point where it goes from the emotion to the identity, right, then it acts. So everybody has that point where they stop. You know, whatever it is, you follow the logic up to that point. And then the logic beyond that you think is not important. Well, if you continue beyond that, you'll see it's flawed. That's the point why the trying to understand the Supreme through material consciousness can't work, if material logic can't work. Because you can always continue the cycle and just keep going. You know? That's the thing, because there's that pointed logic where it just keeps going on itself. There's a name for that, that cyclic kind of thing. And that's a flaw in logic. So you have to. So the point is since there should not be that flaw, it means at some point you have to stop and say, this is the end. But the problem with the material logic is that you could put it anywhere. And you could stop it anywhere. So depending on where you stop it, that's how you get all the material philosophies. But the Supreme means it's by the Supreme's mercy that you can understand. Then you actually understand the absolute truth. So it's actually by mercy, not by logic. So by mercy, now you can apply your logic and it makes sense. But it's not by the logic itself. You know, that's the thing. Okay, commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Some other philosophers do think this theory of pretending is true. They say, the pretending that it is this, the material world is not manifested spontaneously from nothing. Brahman first pretends that it is the individual soul, and then it pretends that the material world exists. How can the individual spirit soul be something different from Brahman? Okay, so they get that, but the point is if Brahman can pretend, that's already a transformation between Brahman and pretending Brahman. So that means you have two different moods of Brahman. So right there, that's already a transformation, that's already a difference. You know what I'm saying? But they're trying to say there's no difference. How can the individual spirit soul be something different from Brahman? It cannot. If it is said that the soul is different from Brahman, the philosophy of impersonals will be killed at once, right? Because that's the whole point. They're trying to maintain that the soul and God are the same. That's the actual point of their impersonalism, because basically they want to be God. But you can take other purposes of Brahman realization, that just everything's Brahman, so it doesn't matter. You can be, there's Supreme Brahman, and then there's individual soul Brahman, and then there's, you know, tree Brahman, and lake Brahman, and, you know, road Brahman, and, you know, like that. Does that make sense? So you could have the variety of Brahman, because just point is it's there, but the point is they want to get the souls non-different, rather than the souls non-different as Brahman, but different qualities of Brahman. They just want to say, well, the Brahman is unlimited, unchanging, so the soul is unlimited and unchanging. But the thing is if the soul is a Brahman, then how is there the soul to think that it's different? Right? And if you say Brahman is, no, but it's all Brahman like that, because you're taking his part, Brahma Parinamabad. The Brahman has changed, but then the problem is it's changed, it's still a transformation. Right? And so that gets rid of the philosophy again. You know? You know, or the Vaishnava see as part of Brahman. It's just a feature of the Supreme Person. So then it's all reconciled. There's no problem that there's souls, there is there is the sameness, there is the difference, there is all these different things. Mm-hmm. But because they're attached to this idea they want to be God, that's where the problem comes. Mm-hmm. It's not that they want the absolute truth. They want the absolute truth to end in that I am God. Mm-hmm. Right? I'm the supreme. That's here. The individual is himself the God of all gods, right? You know. So he's the Lord of Indra. He's the Lord of this. You know, you're sitting here and it's raining on your head and you're getting wet and getting a cold. And then you're saying that you're the Lord of the demigods? It's like, you know, what's going on? I mean, oh, it's my pastime. So it's great. I'd rather be doing something else. Right? Therefore, the individual spirit soul is the pretending of Brahman. Yeah, but then you'd have one kind of soul, but you have so many kinds of souls. So that means a lot of pretending of Brahman. That means so many unlimited qualities, because otherwise how can the pretend be different? Mm-hmm. You know, there must be something by cause and effect. You know? So then they have to say there's no cause and effect. It's strange that there's cause and effect in everything in the pretend, but in the real there isn't anything. So where does this come from? How do you get qualities from no qualities? How do you get something from nothing? You know, so it's just, you know. These philosophers eventually divided into two groups with two different philosophies. The first of these groups says, Brahman is like a great sky. The individual soul covered by illusion is like the small portion of sky within a clay pot. When ignorance cuts Brahman into tiny pieces, these pieces are the individual souls, and that way the soul and Brahman are different. Right? Because the other one is saying they're the same, but it's pretending Brahman. And this one is saying when it's covered, then there's the jiva is different from Brahman because the jiva is an illusion while Brahman can't be an illusion. Mm. Right? So they'll get two different philosophies. Like, who's an illusion? Mm-hmm. Right? Is Brahman pretending to be an illusion, or is the covered Brahman, because it's in small pieces now, you know, but if you can cut it into pieces, that means it's indivisible. Or not indivisible, divisible. So if it's divisible, that means then that's a quality that Brahman's not supposed to have. One, it's a quality, but it's not supposed to have it, you know, any qualities at all. And then here's one that's against its unlimited nature, undivisible nature. Because if you can cut it into pieces, that means Brahman is divisible. Right? And the whole point is Brahman is one. So does that make sense? So right when you get right down to the crux, there's the illusion, but it's right on the edge of our understanding. Does that make sense? So that's why it becomes confusing, because there's so many ways you can put together. So we just say Mayavadis, but even within Mayavadis, there's so many kinds of Mayavadis. Mm-hmm. Right? Just because where it is, because there's a problem with their philosophy, inherent flaw. So all it is the different groups move the flaw to a different place. So whichever one they're comfortable with, you know, in other words, where the flaw is, you don't mind so much. Then they have the rest of their philosophy is solid, right? And then someone else doesn't mind the flaw in a different place. You know, so they just move around the flaw a bit. And then that makes all the different variety. And then they'll say each one's the other one's wrong. But they each have the same fault, you know. Yes. Oh, okay. The second group of philosophers argue against this idea, saying, this idea is an embarrassment to Brahman. For this says that Brahman can be cut into pieces, and also that Brahman itself may be overpowered by illusion. The truth is not like that. Please show that the individual soul is like a reflection of Brahman. The individual spirit soul is like the sun or moon reflected on the water. The individual soul is an illusion, and by him the illusory material world is imagined to exist. So, in other words, the sun is there, and there's reflecting in a pot of water. So if you have 100 pots, there's 100 little reflections. And so now, they're all thinking that this material world is here. So now a problem will come up. Let's finish what he says. Yeah. Then the difficulty also comes up is that, okay, but why is it all the same? So it's a reflection, it's there. It's covered by there, but why does the material world, why does it work so nicely despite the individual soul? Mm-hmm. You know, that means there must be superior intelligence that's doing that.
Mm-hmm.
Or you have to end up with that philosophy. There's one of the souls that's imagining this world, and everybody else is a part of their imagination. So then it's a matter of which one of us is the real soul. Who's the soul and who's the cyborg here? So that's a difficulty. It could definitely keep you up at night. Yes.
And just a note, Jiva Goswami, he calls these two kinds that he's saying. The first is paricheda, that means cutting. The second is pratibimba, that means reflection. So those are the two.
Okay, paricheda and pratibimba.
Yeah.
Okay, that should be put in. Or that
comes, it comes up in the next.
Oh, comes in later. Yeah. Okay. So now he's just introducing the person.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, pratibimba, okay, and paricheda. Okay, cheda means pratibimba means a reflection. Okay. Okay. The individual soul is an illusion. Okay, the individual spirit soul is like the sun or moon reflected on the water. The individual soul is an illusion, and by him the illusory material world is imagined to exist. In truth, only Brahman exists. There is nothing but it. The individual soul is not different from it, and neither is the material world different from it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So we're saying that it's not different from it, it's all the same, but how is there even the perception? Like just that there's a perception of difference means that there's a difference.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right? Because even they'll say there's spiritual consciousness and material consciousness. So there's a difference. So even then, you have these three aspects of...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In other words, Father, Son, and Holy Ghost. in other words, if it's just material, it's just material, but when it's actually reflected a part of Brahman, then it becomes the Holy. Does that make sense? So you always end up with these three.
Yeah.
So that's how these aspects always come out. A great blunder rests in both these philosophies. A blunder that, blinded by unthinking allegiance to their ideas, these philosophers have neither desire nor the power to see. That's the point. This is the real point of the thing, is that on the material platform there is no such thing as objective. It means that they'll claim it's objective, but it's not. Because it says, blinded by unthinking allegiance to their ideas. So that's the idea. They'll have come up with an idea, and then they just are totally committed to it. Why? Because it's their idea. They identify with it. Therefore, they're going to make all the choices based on that idea, because it's them. Right? And so being them, they'll oversee the flaw, overlook the flaw. Right? So they don't have, because they neither have the desire nor the power. One, they don't have the desire, so that's what they can. Nor technically do they have the power, because the power actually has to come from the Lord Himself, His mercy.
Mm-hmm.
And that you're only going to get through pleasing Him,
mm-hmm.
through bhakti. Right? Means anything below this, then you do the work, that's authorized by God, and He'll give you the result. Right? I mean, it's still His mercy, but it's very simple. It doesn't have to have devotion. You just have to mechanically do the thing right. It's just like, you have a machine, you put the coin in, you push the button, you get what you want. Right? Does that make sense? So, it's just a matter of that, but it's still, you've had to do what the manufacturer said you have to do, and then you get your results. So, it's like that. So, in the realm of karma and jnana, you can get that. But the point is actually knowing Brahman, who is Brahman. We could say, no, but it should be the same for Brahman. No, Brahman's God. So within your activities in the material world, then you can do that. But no, Brahman is God, so it's simply by His mercy again. But to know Him, that's only through devotion.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You want to know, it's just like this. You have, let's say, like Buckingham Palace. It's open for tours, or the White House is open for tours. Right? So that means people can go through the place of, the leader of the country. But it's not that because they're on the tour and paid their money that they get to see the leader of the country. No, they just get to see the house. It's the same way as that, you're putting in your effort. You can go around the universe, but you're not going to see God. That takes a different effort. So that's why any effort other than devotion, they always end up short of actually what God is. You know what I'm saying? You know, in Nyaya, there's a supreme. He's a creator, maintainer, and destroyer. But, you know, if I, you know, and this illusion is here, why it's here, it does not explain. What God does, that's not explained. But if the jiva identifies with the, that he is material nature, therefore he suffers. So if I stop identifying with it by giving up all the things that I think I am so that I, you know, I don't identify with everything, it's there, okay. But then still it doesn't explain who God is, who I am, what I'm supposed to be here. Mm-hmm. So there, you become, you know, just liberated. But they don't worry what liberated means. You know what I'm saying? Because there isn't enough philosophy. Vedanta, there's enough philosophy that they could actually get into the Brahman and the soul and all the different things. But they still, because they're using material intelligence, they won't be able to understand actually what is Brahman. Because Brahman is God. Mm-hmm. Right? So it's beyond intelligence. Because the intelligence is a material element. So you have the reason with is mind intelligence and false ego and information from the senses. Right? So unless that information has come from transcendence, right? So in other words, it's carried by the senses and sense objects, but it's actually the transcendental potency. And by the Lord's grace, you're able to recognize that. Right? The transcendental potency. That then you can understand. But if that's not there, the transcendental potency, it's just from the senses and the sense objects, then through the mind, intelligence, and false ego, that process of reasoning, then where is the connection with that and transcendental? Right? I can't tell what flavor the food is from a thermometer. It's just there's no connection. So why would they logically think there would be? To know something, there must be something common. But they think their intelligence is the common thing. They're just proud. Mm-hmm. You know, so that's the thing. Blinded by unthinking allegiance to their ideas. So they're not even thinking that, actually, I can't think beyond this. This is the limit. I can't go beyond this. Mm-hmm. You know, just like if I'm in a room, and it's closed, and there's no windows, doors, or anything, I can't tell what's going on outside. You know? Mm-hmm. Especially when the walls of this room that I'm in, you know, however big the room is, the first layer of walls is 10 times thicker than that. Then the next one is 10 times thicker than that. Like that, then you have, I think, what is it? 9 coverings or 7 coverings? I always get it mixed up, the coverings of the universe and the islands of Bhumandala.
Isn't it just the 5 main elements and then the 3 subtle ones?
And then there's Pradhan also.
Yeah.
So 9.
Yeah.
Yeah, so 9. And then 7 islands.
Okay.
Okay, so 7 islands like on here. The 7 islands. 7 islands and 7 seas. Okay, so that's really, really thick. I think once I figured it out, if the universe is 1 inch thick,
yeah,
then the coverings would be from here to Krishnagar. Yeah. So now you're in a room like that. How are you going to understand anything outside that room? That's impossible. You know? So it's only they're blinded by this attachment to their own ideas. Mm-hmm. That's all. So it's just false ego. Okay. The blunder is that is their idea that Brahman alone exists and there's nothing but it. If they do not accept that Brahman has inconceivable power, then all their ideas are worthless. Right? You just add that one thing, all their problems go away. You can answer any fault that's in this impersonal philosophy is once removed by Saguna Brahman. But as long as they keep Nirguna Brahman, then it'll always be flawed. Right? Some talk of maya, illusion. Others talk of avidya, ignorance. And others talk of pretending. And still others talk of pretending to pretend. Because then, you know, because then he says, no, but how can you be pretending? Well, he's pretending to pretend. He's not actually. Because he's pretending means he's actually doing. That means he's doing. So, no, he's pretending to pretend. No, but what about that? He's pretending to pretend to pretend. You know, coming back 3 weeks later, he's pretending to pretend. Like that, you can just go on. But if they say that Brahman has no power to do anything, then how can they establish the idea that only Brahman and nothing else exists? Because if he does nothing, then how is there even any talk of the individual jiva and illusion? Because that's all doing something. And even if, say, it's an illusion that it's there, still illusion is an effort. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? Yogis have to go through great austerities to get the mystic powers to create illusion. Mm-hmm. You know? So where does it come from? Suddenly, you know, everything here is about energy and getting you energy transforming into another energy, but somehow or another, in this case, there is no energy and nothing transformed. Mm-hmm. You know, how does it work? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it just comes back to they're blinded by their false ego. Mm-hmm. In every one of their ideas is seen the fatal flaw that kills the impersonal. In every one of their ideas is seen the flaw, the fatal flaw that kills the impersonal philosophy. So each one of them can kill it. So that's the thing. We're thinking, oh, very difficult to defeat them. No, everything about their philosophy is designed to destroy their philosophy. Yes.
So really, there is no such thing as Nirguna Brahman.
There is no such thing as Nirguna Brahman. You do have the aspect of Nirguna Brahman, meaning it's Nirguna, meaning there's no material qualities.
Right.
So in that way, you could say Brahman is Nirguna. So when it talks about Brahman as Nirguna, it means that.
Yeah.
Just like Krishna, that the Supreme has no form, means no material form.
Yes.
So even Nirguna is a quality of Saguna Brahman. Mm-hmm. Like that. Mm-hmm. So we don't have any problem that there is Nirguna Brahman, but there isn't only Nirguna Brahman. Mm-hmm. It's part of Nirguna Brahman.
Right.
I mean Saguna Brahman.
And even when we say it's all-pervading, it's unmanifest, those are qualities.
Those are qualities. Yeah, because even when they say it, they're qualities. Though they're saying, no, it's unchangeable. But then unchangeable is a quality, and you're saying it's Nirguna, so it doesn't even have the quality of unchanging, according to them. Mm-hmm. Right? Mm-hmm. To not change, that's a potency. Because mm-hmm. everything changes by potency. So to not change, that's also potency. Mm-hmm. You know? So the thing is that the philosophy is just full flawed from beginning to end. Everything's a flaw when they get right down to dealing with Brahman. Mm-hmm. You know, the concept that the material world is there, it's causing our, our being bound in illusion, and that by giving up attachment to the world and to that perception, then you'll get liberated. All these things up to that point are correct. Right? Because it's Vedanta. We say exactly the same thing. The problem is when they get to that point of liberation and how there's creation and what happens after getting to liberate, that's where then their flaws are. Because they only understand what's within the material sphere. Mm-hmm. And because they're following Vedanta, it technically is not any different than what we say. Mm-hmm. You know, we may not use the examples and other things, how they'll use them. Because there's the element it's used, but then the point is that association with the Supreme mm-hmm. as a person. So therefore, that sweetness, that lightness is there. But theirs, it's dry. Because they've shown how to get out of the world, but then the whole process is just the dry part. There's no attraction. You know what I'm saying? You know, it's one thing that it's just like you're trying to push a rock up a hill, you know? But the point is that's going to be very difficult. Because if at any point you stop, you get, you know, run over. But if you're pulling it up the hill, even if it stops, it can just sit there. Right? It won't go back. That's the point. Devotional service moves forward. Wherever you stop, then it stays there. And then it continues again. So you have the process of pushing and pulling at the same time. Then it's very easy. If it's only pushing, very difficult. And dangerous. Right? You can't exactly like sit down under the rock. It just roll right over the top. So, yeah.
Yeah.
So nice. So this indicates that before liberation means everybody can follow Vedanta, and after we need the mercy of devotee to go.
Yes, yes. But the point is it's still very slow. Now even we say that, we say, okay, well, it means by applying the philosophy of Vedanta, we could bring ourselves up to the liberated platform. But not liberation itself. That we know comes by the mercy of the Lord. But up to that point, you could say on one level, yes. But then the problem is who has the qualities of detachment and knowledge and all those things? That means somebody who's very pious. Right? So that means the path of jnana is not open to everybody. Because, in other words, you have the material qualifications. Technically, you could do it. Mm-hmm. But the thing is to get to that focus and that level, who really has that qualities? Right? We see in previous ages they might have had those qualities. But still, to get liberated, it's still you're following the Lord's process, because you still have to follow the process. You need the good qualities to follow, but it's still that process is delineated by the Lord. So following that process, pleasing the Lord, then you get that liberation. But it's still temporary, because you still have the idea I'm the controller and enjoyer. So that means it's fundamentally material. You've gotten rid of the external coverings that are creating the problem. You know, the exact experience. You know, it's just like, let's say, someone has a criminal mentality. Then when he applies the criminal mentality, he gets in trouble. Okay? So he suffers. Now you could say, okay, we're going to get rid of all the criminal activities. Right? And it sounds good. But unless you remove the criminal mentality, they will be done again. It's just a matter of time. So the criminal will be liberated from the effects of the criminal act, the results of criminal activities, but still the criminal mentality is that he will again, after coming, have the desire, he'll come back from Brahman and again be engaged in material activities. Does that make sense? So that's all. It's just like your prison. They stop you from doing all the nonsense. But it doesn't mean the mentality's changed. So when your time is up, you get out, you go out, and then again you're doing criminal activities. Mm-hmm. 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 Does that make sense? Yeah, so that's just the way it works. Makes sense? Yeah, but if they say Brahman has no power to do anything, right, because he's nirguna, because power is opulence, is potency, so that means there's something else, there's a second. Then how can they establish your idea that only Brahman and nothing else exists? Right? So that means you can't have any transformation or any covering or anything, because both all of them are transformation of Brahman. It's just whether you give it directly to Brahman or make it indirect to Brahman. Mm-hmm. Right? So your Vivarta and or your Parinamabad. Then both of them, then it's still, it's just one is direct Brahman, the other is at the living entity, and then there's a transformation into the material consciousness. Right? But then they don't look at that transformation, because they are looking at something separate that doesn't exist. But so that potency is there, so there has to be guna. Okay. If we accept the idea that Brahman has inconceivable power, and if we say that Brahman is the only thing that exists, then Brahman has no need to take shelter of anything but itself. Then Brahman is not different from any substance or any power. Then, by Brahman's inconceivable power, change and changelessness, form and formlessness, qualities and qualityness, and a host of other mutually contradicting natures may simultaneously and eternally exist within Brahman without negating each other's existence. Right? So that's the whole point. If you have saguna, then all the things they're looking for are there. Right?
Yeah.
But if you don't, then nothing that they talk about is there. You know, so then they can say, no, but then So they can get what they want from accepting the actual philosophy. But then the point is if you accept the actual philosophy, why would you want to limit the result you get to simply liberation when so much more is available?
Mm-hmm.
You know? Because in any case, then you come back here again because you haven't changed the Purusha Bhav. The reason they want to merge in Brahman is I am Brahman and Brahmananda. I am the enjoyer. Right? I am the controller, I am Brahman, and I am the enjoyer, I'm Brahmananda.
Mm-hmm.
It still remains, it's just subtler, that's all. Even the greatest effort of human reason cannot understand Brahman's inconceivable power. It's just not possible, because you're talking about limited. Right? Means even if we look at these lower philosophies, we're not even talking about Vedanta here, the lower philosophies, we take Vaisheshika. Okay? Now you have a certain amount of intelligence as an element, right? It means that there's the egg is a certain amount of pradhan. Now when you change that to mahat, that means as it divides, there's a certain amount of intelligence. Right? Now, the particular intelligence that an individual living entity has is just coming something from that. Right? Yes, because it means the intelligence is made of intelligence atoms. And so every living entity only has a certain amount of these atoms within their sphere of their subtle body. So how could one know unlimited by even a limited amount of something that's limited? We're talking about material energy is one quarter of the cause of manifestation. So, you know, but on that you could say, but then there's unlimited little living in universes that are limited in size. Right? Just as the external potency is one quarter, as the spiritual world expands, it's also expanding. But the number of the universes, that is, it's unlimited. But the amount of volume of material energy in one of those is limited. So already right there, on the primal point of it, it's limited. Then you take the secondary, where you have a certain amount of those intellectual atoms, you know, means those atoms of intelligence in your subtle body. So already you're twice removed from unlimited. It's just not possible. It's just mathematically not. And that's just the simple philosophy of Vaisheshika,
mm-hmm.
You know, which doesn't even get into technical details of creation or anything. You know, does that make sense? You know, so it's just, yeah.
But the six darshanams, they are not against Krishna.
They're not against, if you understand their place in.
Yes.
The point is you can, their conclusions are wrong. Right? And because of that, and they're also using only certain portions,
yes,
of the Vedic understanding, right? So, therefore, there's limited. So it means the first four, then they're only using part of the Vedas, whichever part supports, and
mm-hmm.
the other parts that don't, they don't deal with them. It's not that they're necessarily opposed; they just don't deal with them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? You know, it's just like you go down to a place store and say, hey, do you have this? No, we don't stock that. It's just, we don't. It's just, okay, that's just the way it is. Now, karma mimamsa, it deals with all the verses of the Vedas, but it only uses the brahmanas for interpretation. So in other words, they're only acknowledging the karma aspect of the complete Veda. So it's more complete in that it accepts more verses. That's its superiority. That's why they can defeat the others. It's not that karma is necessary is a higher philosophy than the jnana positions of the other three. I mean the other four. It's that it accepts the whole Veda, and so because of that, since the others only use certain verses, they will be defeated by someone expert in karma, because he has the whole range of the whole verses of all the Veda to establish his point. Therefore, karma can defeat any of the other lower philosophies. But where its weakness is it's only accepting the karma interpretation of the Veda. not the gyan. Right? So now that's where Uttara Mimamsa, because it accepts the karma and goes on to the gyan. So that's why then Uttara Mimamsa can defeat Karma Mimamsa, because now again you have a broader range. You've doubled. Right? In other words, karma is so much better than the others because they do a limited non-verses, while karma has so many more verses. But then they only have half the interpretation. Vedanta has the other half. Right? Now within Vedanta, still you're applying all this, but you're still using the material intellect. Now, as soon as you connect to the Supreme, through the Vaishnava understanding, that's then where it comes out greater. Does that make sense? Because now you're actually touching transcendence. Before they get a glimpse that there's something beyond, because the soul is unlimited, therefore there's this concept of unlimited. The soul is happy, is ananda, so therefore this concept of happiness. The soul is chit, so therefore the idea that knowledge and endeavor can get my happiness. But that's all because it's inherent in the soul. But there, the facilities that they're using are not spiritual. It's just the gross and subtle body. Therefore, they can't know what's beyond. So it's only by the grace of the unlimited Supreme that the individual can know. Right? The individual Brahman, the transcendence, but they can't know who they are even without their connection to the Lord. That's why it's said, when the sun rises, you can see yourself in the mirror. So it's not the mirror, it's the sun that gives the thing. So they're thinking, by my intellect I can see. No, when the sun rises, then using the intellect, then you can see. Right? Because it's light through, you know, that then that you're able to see. So when the Lord gives his mercy, then the living entity can actually understand who they are. So self-realization is still depends upon the Lord's mercy for that realization to take place. Does that make sense?
And the Mayavadis are against Krishna.
The Mayavadis are against. That's why he makes this point. Blinded by unthinking allegiance to their ideas. They have neither the desire nor power to see, because they want it to be all one. They don't want there to be a person, because they want to be the supreme person. But at the same time, not a person. It doesn't make sense, but whatever it is. So it is because they're blinded by the idea. It's just a clever way to make it work.
Yes. Actually, in which sense karma is higher than the other?
In no sense. I said because karma mimamsa, as a philosophy, accepts the whole Veda, therefore they're able to defeat the four lower ones. But the four lower ones, their purpose is gyan. So on that level, the philosophical element, they're categorized, you know, they would be categorized in yan. Yan's higher. But because they're only using a limited amount of the Veda, that their resources are less. So Karma Mimamsa accepts all the resources of the Veda. So then they'll be able to defeat all these other philosophies. But if we add all the resources of the Veda to gyan, it will defeat karma. You understand? That's even the greatest effort of human reason cannot understand Brahman's inconceivable power. Why should we not accept the truth that Brahman has inconceivable power? The glories of Brahman, who has inconceivable powers, is indefinitely greater than the glory of the impersonal, qualityless Brahman. Because if you want to say, if you're really stuck about, you don't want Brahman to get insulted, then why not there be, you know, why would Brahman get insulted if there's no qualities?
Yes.
You know? So the whole point is the quality Brahman, Brahman with quality, that is the actual much greater and much more superior. If Brahman has qualities, then this becomes very special. I glorify the Supreme Brahman. The Brahman who has transcendental powers is the Supreme Brahman. The Brahman without qualities or powers is called merely Brahman. Right? So here he's got the Supreme Brahman and Brahman. So when we say Supreme Brahman, that's not the Brahman the Mayavadis are talking about. Mm-hmm. That means with qualities. So that's that aspect of Krishna as Brahman. So that's the supreme Brahman, you know, or para Brahman. That Brahman is, that Brahman, or the qualityless, is merely a part of the supreme Brahman. In other words, that he has no material qualities, nirguna, that's a quality of saguna Brahman. The philosophy that turns away from the supreme Brahman and accepts only the partial Brahman is a very inferior kind of philosophy, right? Even though within the material sphere it may be greater than any of the other ones. A philosophy born of small minds. Right? Now, why small minds? They may have great intellect, but it's the mind that makes the decision, so they have small minds. You know what I'm saying? You know, your scientists, your philosophers may have great intelligence and can and can conceive of all kinds of amazing things. You know, beyond what the common man can ever hope to come near. But because they're small-minded, therefore, in the end, they still come up with something basically as useless or more useless than what the common person has.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. At least the common person is, you know, getting some money and you know, getting something to eat.
Mm-hmm. This is the reason, Maharaj, that sometimes scientists are classified as manamoy.
No, it's just why they're always anamoy. Pranamoy, never manamoy. The Mayavadis never make the manamoy, they're only pranamoy.
Scientists
anamoy. Because it's all, if you can't see it with your senses, it doesn't exist.
But once I found in the Krishna book, Prabhupada put them manamoy.
That means because they're just the mind and then speculating on different things here. So that would mean maybe you're Vedic. Your Vedic philosophers.
Oh, I see.
Like that. No. Like that. Because they may be able to elevate themselves even. A Brahmavadi can get to Anandamoy. But it's only the Brahman aspect of Ananda. It's not actually devotional. So they can get there. Though generally, they can't. Mayavadis never get there because they don't even know the nature of the soul or the nature of anything. So how are they actually on the platform of Dharma? Is Dharma, you have to know what is God, what's living energy, what's the material world, so therefore what are my duties? Because otherwise, if the duty is there, but why would the duty be there? Why does the father have to take care of the family? Because God takes care of the creation. You know what I'm saying? So if you don't know transcendence, you really don't know Dharma. So that's why, in the real sense, then Dharma and Sad-Dharma are the same thing. But if it's Dharma without God, then it's just Varnashram. Right? But if it's Dharma with God, we call it Sad-Dharma. So Daiva Varnashram is Sad-Dharma. Otherwise, if it's not Daiva Varnashram, it's just Dharma. Right? So then it's a problem. Yes, so therefore the mind is small because it makes it. They are so blinded by their unthinking allegiance to their ideas that they actually can't see what's beyond. Right? Because. Does that make sense? So either they have to throw up big false ego and just, you know, you're a layperson, you can't understand, even though you're saying things that they can't understand, but they reverse it. Or they blow up. You know, does that make sense? You know, so that's on the intellectual. Then when you get down to the religious, that when you say something that they can't understand, then it's the work of the devil.
Yes.
Right? Or if they take the emotional, that you're offending God, you're offending this, you're like that.
Yes.
All it means is that they're not intelligent, they're too small-minded to understand. But they react as if it's your problem. So that's again. You know, because if it really is like that, then if somebody can't understand, they're just not qualified. Like trying to, you know, explain something very technical to a small child. You know, you don't get upset and start yelling and screaming at the kid and this and that. And it's just a matter. You start to explain, and when they can't catch it, oh, okay, yeah, no, don't worry about it. It's fine. You know. You know what I'm saying? It's just you just know. It's just you just drop it. But they don't just drop it. Why? Because they're small-minded. Mm-hmm. Yes.
We also hear that Vajradis are more offensive, worse, actually, the worse.
Yeah, because they say God has no form. So that's offensive. He's the origin of all form. Right? Bhagavan means, beauty means form. Right? So that's the first quality. And then everything else is expanded from that.
So it would be due to the envious mentality that Jiva turned into.
Yes.
Ignorance is a difference.
It's ignorant. Why would you be envious of someone that you know you can't actually have any power over? Envious, you want to take the position. Jealous, you want the position also. You know what I'm saying? Point is God's the supreme control and enjoyer. We want to be the supreme controller and enjoyer. Pious means you're acknowledging that in my striving for controlling and enjoying, I'm the small one and God's the great one. So then I'm willing to engage my small amount of independence and controlling and enjoying according to the rules of the Lord. Does that make sense? So then that's called pious. You know, so it's progressive, but it's not until we completely give up the idea that I'm the controller and enjoyer that one situates oneself in the spiritual realm.
He said the Narada Muni at one point he was crying because of the new identity is going to emerge in Ramachandra, in somebody who was standing next to me, he was asking me why you crying. That was a reply that because of me, this event we want to join. But it seems like that the other event is suffering much more than any other who is going to join. The position of the somebody who is going to Ramajodhi is much better than.
Okay. Let's say your wife's upset. Right? We're just giving you. What do you call it?
Hypothetical.
Yeah, hypothetical. I'm not saying that it ever happens. We're just saying, just say, maybe she gets upset. Okay? Now, you could say that we're just, in this, we're simplifying, taking two major divisions of the manifestation of being upset. Okay? One is, she's upset and talking to you, right? And telling you what an idiot and this and that. The other is, she's upset and not saying anything, so you don't even know what's wrong. Which is worse? Yeah, so that's called Brahmajyoti. You understand? In other words, bad interactions better than no interaction. So Brahman means no interaction. That's why the jiva falls from Brahman, because bad interaction was better than sitting in Brahman. That's just downright boring. You understand? So it's just mental speculation that it's better in Brahman. The only reason that we agree on the philosophy of renunciation and detachment from the material world is that, yes, it's superior to be detached from this material world, because then you can be attached to the spiritual world, the Lord in the spiritual world. On that context, then it's higher. But as far as rasa goes, it's actually lower. That's why the mayavadis, they're all dry. You know? Dry because they say there's nothing, or you see the scientists, they're very dry because everything's just dead matter. You know, so the two extreme ends of dryness. And if you have a scientist who's a Mayavadi, then that's like, you know, as essence of dryness. even a desert would be afraid of death. You know? Okay? Yes.
So it is so dry that the only way to make a little life is by word, by thinking.
They eventually, that's why you see they all go into philanthropy. Because the thing is, they've given up the idea of you know, their own personal, my enjoyment or my family or that sense. So charity and good work seems to be that it avoids that.
Yes.
But it's just a subtler, extended form of that. You know, maybe it's so then it's humanity. Okay, maybe it's not your family, but it's humanity. You're still attached to some concept that you're identifying with. So there still will be problems, maybe less problems, but it's still, you know, because it's more pious. So then it's like, you know, but it's still, you'll see all the Mayavadi schools or the, you know, the Nirvana or schools. They all do pious work.
Yes.
They all do. Yes. You know, all the Buddhists are known for good work. Even the Mayavadis, they have schools and, you know, charity and all these kind of things. Everybody does that because, not because that's part of, as a human being, you should do like the religionists or the moralists. But this is just that it's so dry they can't function because they're a soul. So soul has to have taste, has to have interaction.
Yes.
So they choose which one seems the least involving. Right? So Dharma has so much involved, so they're doing the sannyas dharma or the renunciates dharma.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And they're not going to get into sense gratification. Mm-hmm. You know? And or into, you know, let's say regular justice or economics. So that little aspect of the ethics and like that, yes, they can get involved in a very simple way. You know? Yeah, that makes sense. They just put it in context of their philosophy.
Yes. This term Mayavadi?
Mayavadi, yes.
This is term that,
it's the term that they use themselves.
Yes. Or others.
Just like this. You call yourself Polish.
Yes.
Okay. Now, to you, Polish means something of value. Right? What does the Germans think of the Poles? Okay? Yeah. So they'll also call you Polish.
Mm-hmm.
You understand?
Mm-hmm.
So Mayavadis call themselves Mayavadis.
Mm-hmm.
We also call them Mayavadis.
Mm-hmm.
It's just a different context. They think it means something special. We think it means something not so special. Okay? You get it? Yeah. So that's it. It's just like Sahaja. That's their term.
Yeah.
It's not a different Mayavadi, the philosophy of Maya.
Right.
The point is that it's illusion.
Uh-huh.
Illusion is there. So there is no material world. It's not transformed Brahman. It doesn't exist. It's illusion. Therefore Mayavadi.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So Brahma Parinam Mavad, that's different. They say this is all real. It's all Brahman. But the point is that Brahman transformed into this without energy. So that's a problem. So only if you accept Saguna Brahman, it means Brahman's potency transformed into this. Then Brahman remains as it is, and the glories of Creator and everything else comes out. Like, so only Shakti Parinamavad works for everybody. Because the point is Shakti Parinamavad, the point is it is still Brahman. You know, the point of Brahman. It's still, and you're Brahman, so therefore, you're not supposed, it's not a matter of enjoying on a material platform. So, you're not supposed to do anything material. Does that make sense? So, your dealings in the world should simply be in support of Brahman understanding. So, it works for them also. But the point is why would you use it for that? It'd be like having the, you know, having your Ferrari or something, and, you know, driving it down to the store, which is on the corner of the block, to pick up, you know, a loaf of bread. You know, you go, you know, 50 meters down the road, right? You know, come out of your driveway, go across, you know, once you cross, go across the street and park, you know. And then come back out of the store, then, you know, come out, turn around, and drive back in your driveway. So it's just, why a Ferrari, you know? a Polsky Fiat would do fine. Okay. Does that mean anything to you?
Nothing using them anymore.
Huh? The Polsky Fiat was a special Fiat made by Fiat just for Poland.
Oh.
So Hoczmarz used to call it the Yogi's car. Because in Poland, they say five people can fit inside, but unless they're yogis, you can't get five people inside. But they fit. Poles, you can fit five people. If it was Europeans, you can't get five people inside. It's just not possible. They're smaller than the smallest Fiat that you see anywhere else in Europe. It's really small.
Only to sit.
Huh?
Only to sit.
Basically, front and back. Yeah. It's a big enough for 1.5 people. But you know, technically 3 people is if the one person kind of laid down on top of the seat. So one sitting in the front, one sitting in the back, and one laying down on the top, like that. But somehow or another they can fit. You know, fit everybody in.
We fitted in. Well, when we were like kids, I mean, our parents used to have one. Well, like basically only for kids, I guess. Because normal people wouldn't fit in.
But somehow, I've seen it. They all get in because they don't sit normally.
Yeah.
You know, one's forward, one's back, sideways, like that. So for them, that's normal. So they just do it. But anybody else, you know, you wouldn't be able to fit. It's like Indians fitting 11 people in an ambassador. Nowadays they don't do those things. But back in the 70s, I saw cars show up, ambassadors, and we're talking 11. We're not counting the driver. Driver is part of the car. So we say it seats 11. We mean the people other than the driver. Like that. And I'm not talking about skinny people. I'm talking about Marwaris. Fat Marwaris. You know, there are a few kids, 3 or 4 kids. You know, the grandmother, you know, like this and that. And then, you know, the other people that are big. And you know, but they sit. One's forward, one's back, one's this, one's that. And because that's what it is, everybody tolerates. So they had, you know, better qualities, you could say. You know, less sophistication, more good qualities. Right, you know, well, modern has more sophistication, less good quality, so they can't tolerate. But there, they just everybody. It's not like, oh no, we got to ride in this. It's just like, hey, yeah, get in the car, you know. And it's always there's always room for one more. I think skinny people I once saw more. The Bengalis I saw more in the ambassador. But Marwaris, it was 11. I was impressed.
I was wondering, in terms of the Shakti Parinamabad, that's the female principle. Does that mean that the Brahman represents the male principle, or do both male and female coexist within?
Brahman means both, but yeah. Brahman means there's the masculine aspect and the feminine aspect. So we talk about the unchanging, we're talking about the masculine element. So what changes and everything, that's the feminine aspect. And the point is the masculine produces the feminine, so it's non-different.
Mm-hmm.
Right? It means the generator produces the electricity. So you can say here's generator, here's electricity. You can say there's two, but if you turn off the generator, there is no electricity. The generator exists, there's no electricity.
Oh, I see.
So the generator and electricity are non-different. Mm-hmm. Why would you call it a generator if it doesn't make electricity? And electricity can't exist without the generator. So there are two aspects, they're one. Does that make sense? So even in definition, in explanation, only Vaishnavas actually are true monists. Because God and His creation are non-different. So there is only God.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to appreciate the fact is God and His potency.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So therefore, it works.
Mm-hmm.
That makes sense?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But yeah. When
so when we discuss like the masculine and feminine principle, the column and the potency, that's Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's not dealing with the person.
Yes.
But it's still the attributes of the person.
It's like the reservoir of qualities.
Yes, he's a reservoir. And some portion of it's manifest here.
Yeah.
You know, just like there's some atoms of earth that are in the column. And then there's the you know, the atoms of the universe, mm-hmm. right? And a small part of that's manifest here. So then, in the same way as there's the unlimited Lord, and then a portion of that potency of Brahman is manifest in this column. Mm-hmm. And by seeing that, you can connect with the unlimited Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is that unlimited Brahman being Saguna, because you're seeing the masculine and feminine principle, then is the natural step is to go from that part of Brahman to the person, to Bhagavan.
Mm-hmm.
It's just natural if it's all explained properly. Right. So this is the interesting thing. We use the Brahman understanding to get to the person. Right? We use both the direct and indirect. The direct means the Lord in His name, the Lord in His, you know, His form, His qualities, pastimes, the Bhagavatam, you know, the association of Vaishnavas, the worship of the deity, the holy Dham, are all directly the Lord. So that aspect, and at the same time, the indirect is that the material energy is Krishna's potency. It's all working on this platform of masculine and feminine aspects of Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because when we say Shakti Parinama, it means Saguna Brahman, the guna is the feminine aspect. The Brahman is the masculine aspect. Right? So then, we're using, then everything else, we're connecting it to the Lord by understanding how it is Brahman. And that way we lose that attachment we have for it, because we actually understand what we're attached to, what we're looking for, it's Krishna. Does that make sense? Then because it's Krishna you're looking for, then we transfer immediately to the direct. Right? So this is fun, is that, but then you have all these other, these upasampradayas and so-called world religions and all these kinds of things like this, where they start talking about the personal, but then they end up with the impersonal. So the Mayavadis will also do that. They recommend for the common person to meditate on a form, or the smartest, they meditate on a form, but ultimately there is no form. So then that's the impersonalist thing, is you start with personal, end up at impersonal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Well, we start with both the personal and impersonal, end up with only personal.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So, in other words, where they end is where we start.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
When they've reached the end of their philosophy, that's the beginning of ours. So what they take as so prominent, we take as secondary.
Right.
So,
I mean, that connects to the whole point of Brahma-Bhuta, is that bhakti can't be performed except on the transcendental.
Yes.
So that's their ultimate goal.
They're trying to get to there, but that's for us, that's when, now it gets serious, as you can see by what Bhaktivinoda Thakur was talking about in Bhav Sadhana. Now this is really serious Shuddha Bhakti.
Yeah.
You know. But there then they're talking Shuddha Bhakti. That means they'll use Shuddha Bhava, you know, the proper mood. But now you're talking Shuddha Bhakti meaning prema.
Mm-hmm.
While in the realm of sadhana, the Shuddha Bhakti means devotion devoid of material elements. It's meant to please Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But then when you get to Bhava, then you're already on the Shuddha Bhakti platform, but now you're taking Bhava as the standard and you're trying to get the Shuddha Bhakti means that it's pure devotion.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? So it's prema.
Yeah.
So then you can say, now it's really serious.
Mm-hmm.
But the point, you only get to that point by going through sadhana. So by sadhana, that will elevate you to the Bhava.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And then from Bhava, that will elevate you to prema.
Mm-hmm.
But the key point is the Lord's mercy throughout. It's just like for the karmi, if he follows it very nicely, he becomes elevated to the platform of a Brahmin. The Brahmin follows it nicely, he becomes elevated to, you know, actually being vidvan, having knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
If he's elevated, then he actually understands that, you know, the purpose is to serve the Supreme. Right, and then a part of Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
Right, and then of that, then it becomes the devotion. So we can see as the Vaishnavas are already starting way ahead. But still, within way ahead, you make distinction. You know, you don't say, oh, it's so much. No. He said, this is small compared to the rest. Devotees get bewildered sometimes. Oh, Prabhupada's, you know, so much, it's so ritualistic. No, this is nothing. This is nothing.
Yes.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So then, okay, the philosophy that turns away from the supreme Brahman and accepts only the partial Brahman, right? Supreme here meaning Saguna, right? Partial meaning just Brahman or Nirguna. Is a very inferior kind of philosophy. A philosophy born of small minds. Of this there is no doubt. This impersonal philosophy has no power to satisfy the questions posed by good logic. Right? Means they can deal with lower levels than good logic, because they're separated between spirit and matter. Up to that point, they're doing fine, but when they actually get to questions about spirit, that's where their philosophy falls apart. Right? It has no power to understand the true meaning of the Vedas. That means devotion to the Lord. It has no power to give the individual spirit souls the greatest auspiciousness. And you get some auspiciousness by not involving yourself in material activities. Because the activities recommended in the Vedas are actually supposed to be meant for the Lord's service. You know, but if you use those ones that are supposed to be used in the Lord's service and just do those, even without doing it for the Lord, it's considered pious, because at least you're doing the activities that are proper.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Just like, let's say someone's a vegetarian. That'll be better than someone who's a meat eater. Why? Because vegetarian is what you're supposed to engage in the Lord's service. Right? Meat eating, you're not going to engage in the Lord's service.
Mm-hmm.
So all pious positions are, because those are the natural positions of the devotee. Right, devotee is, you know, does his duties, he's responsible, he deals nicely with everyone, he's truthful, like that. You understand? All these different things like that. Because that's what a devotee does. Now, if you're not a devotee and you do it, you still get credit, so you get better material facility. Right? So you could say that's auspicious. But the greatest auspiciousness is now using that in the Lord's service and getting devotional benefit. So that... all this variety of impersonalists can't get.
Right.
Is that what it says?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Text 23. Eteshu vada jaleshu tadsareva vinishchitam anvaya vyatireka bhyam advaya jnana eva vat. The truth lies somewhere in this network of conflicting philosophies. Directly and indirectly, the non-dual Brahman is understood there.
Mm.
Right? So in this network, directly and indirectly, because that's what we were discussing before, is this direct and indirect. This is what Krishna is talking about in the fourth verse
of
the Chatur Shloki, is direct and indirect.
Mm-hmm.
You should look at both. Because the point is if you only see Krishna everywhere, you don't have to worry about it. But if you're seeing Krishna and Maya, then where you see Krishna, that's the direct. Where you don't see Krishna, that's where you then apply the indirect.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Because for you it's Maya, but the point is the potency that makes that Maya work is still Krishna. So then that way you get back to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But if you don't see Maya, you only see Krishna, there's no need.
Mm-hmm.
Right? But if you're going to preach, then you will see the difference.
Mm-hmm.
Like that. In other words, that's why someone on the Uttam platform doesn't preach, because they're only seeing Brahman. So what's the problem? Right? So you have to acknowledge that people aren't seeing Brahman. So how they're not seeing Brahman, that's how then you preach.
Yes.
Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm.
Commentary by Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakura. These different philosophies are like a great net. A net badly woven by the different philosophers. In the midst of all these different philosophies, the truth is somewhere to be found. Finding out what is untrue, throwing those untruths far away, and searching for what is real truth is called finding the truth. It only has one quotation mark. Is that supposed to be quote-unquote finding the truth?
Yeah, or just an error in the manuscript.
Because otherwise it's always the thing with the where the quotation marks, before or after the period.
Yeah.
A French philosopher named Victor Kunja. Really? How would you say that?
That's Kunja. I've never heard his name.
No, but I'm saying in French, how would you say that?
Kunja.
But I mean, that's
like
pretty... Huh?
Like a Forrest Bauer.
Yeah, that's pretty far out. Tried to understand the truth in this way, but in the end he could not find it. He failed because he searched only among the thoughts of the Western thinkers. Right? In other words, going through is, that means you're throwing out the bad stuff and then trying to catch the real stuff. So then the problem is he only went through the Western philosophy. So he throws everything out by that, but he still doesn't get to it because he only used Western philosophy. The Western intelligence is very materialistic. The Western philosophers had no power to understand the subtle difference between the spirit soul and what is not the spirit soul, because that's a common thing that all Western philosophers, they can't define that. That you have definition you find in the Upanishads. Right? Their minds firmly attached to matter, they said that material mind is the spirit soul. As a search for rice grains amongst the empty husks of already threshed rice brings no result. So Victor Kunja's search was fruitless in the end. In the Upanishad mantra 15, it is said, Hiranmayena patrena satyasyapi tambukam tatvampushan apavrinu satyadharmaya drishtaye. Oh my Lord, here, just an example. So somehow or another is you know, just that. Let's see. No, it's something else. It's I won't. Oh, my Lord, O sustainer of all that lives, your real face is covered by your dazzling effulgence. Please remove that covering and exhibit yourself to your pure devotee. Well, there's an asterisk there.
I don't think it has a destination.
Here, just one question comes. Is this, now we're talking about some French dude. Is that why the asterisk is connected
asterisk.
There? Yes? No? Maybe. Okay. It's Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said. Yes? Makes sense? Doesn't make sense. Doesn't make sense? Don't worry about it. It's Srimad Bhagavatam, it is said. Anubhyascha brihabhyascha shastrebhya kushalo nara saravatas sharam adhyat pushpebhya iva satpada. As a bee takes honey from many different flowers, so wise man takes the truth from many different great and small books. Right, so he mentioned the great and small. Because generally speaking, I remember one devotee had delved into Ayurveda, you know, and had read a lot of books. And then he was saying something, this and that, and then later on the side, an actual Ayurvedic doctor, he said to me, he's read all the big books, but he hasn't read any of the small books. Because the small books are explanations of how to apply the big books.
No.
You know, so actually he didn't really know what he was talking about. You know, he's saying nice stuff that's all quoting from the big books, but to actually apply that into how it works, that's...
Yeah.
Does that make sense? You know, that's why the Acharyas, Prabhupada's give us all the small books. You know, so you understand how to apply the big books.
We consider that like conversations and letters as well.
You could. That's one way. But another is that, you know, they'll take the Veda as the main. But if you don't take the Smriti,
yes.
You know, because in there the big book is the Veda, the small book are the Smriti.
Mm-hmm.
So without that, you won't actually understand the Veda.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that would be a better way.
Yeah.
Okay. In this way, Vaishnava philosophers find the truth in many books like the Vedas and Srimad Bhagavatam. In the less important books, the books written by materialistic philosophers, and in the very important books, books that truly explain the science of the soul, the Vaishnavas finds the real truth. Part of that truth is called Advaya Jnana, knowledge of impersonal Brahman. That impersonal Brahman is only a small portion of the whole supreme truth, the truth that is eternal and full of knowledge and bliss. But by the word Sat, the truth, the supreme, is described. When the Sat, truth, is manifest, then the Asat, untruth, is thrown far away. The word Sat also refers to the world of spirit. This world of matter, which is called Asat, is only a reflection of that world of spirit. Right? So, even amongst all the knowledge, just the Advaita Brahman the knowledge of Brahman is only a portion of it.
Mm-hmm.
Right? And so, for us, it's just a portion, but you have to know that properly so that you understand how you relate everything back to Krishna.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, is for the Mayavadis or the impersonalists, that small portion of knowledge, the Advaita Jnana, is their whole main thing. And that, without knowing the greater picture, you know, they don't actually know properly.
Mm-hmm.
So even that they don't get right.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so they detach themselves partially.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and if they're Brahma bodies, not Maya bodies, they might even get themselves the Brahman.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
Maya bodies will never get themselves the Brahman. You don't have to worry about that. You know, that's why it says they go to the darkest reaches because they're the killers of the soul.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense? So it's a very subtle point.
Yeah.
Well, now we have 63. There's a vriti. Oh, vriti. Okay, that's not hard.
Yeah.
I was going to say, where's the verse?
Yeah. For the whole previous.
Yeah. It seems that Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur is a very good example of a person who knows a big book and a small book.
Yes. No, he knows all. That's why you can write all these small books to bring out the exact,
right.
Exact principles of what's there.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. You see, he's very broad-minded, real accommodating.
Yeah.
But it's not accommodating by compromise. It's accommodating means it already fits into. See, logic means... See, compromise means it's on the mental platform. Means synthesizing, that's on the intellectual platform. Does that make sense? Means there's a philosophy and you have your philosophy, but you can show how their philosophy is already part of our philosophy. In other words, the Mayavadis is already part of our philosophy.
Yeah.
Right? You know, the Sahajiyas, you know, that they want to, you know, serve the Lord or attain Rasa, it's already part of our philosophy. Right? The materialist that he wants to be successful in his endeavors, that's already part of our philosophy.
Mm-hmm.
Problem is they don't know the whole philosophy, so they misapply it.
Mm-hmm.
It's overbalanced. It's overemphasized.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not natural. But everything that anybody's looking for is already there in the Vaishnava philosophy. You just have to know the balance.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the point is if you have money and can't enjoy it, what's the use? You know, it's just like there's this, I can't remember his name. Very, very wealthy man. I think he's doing it. At one point, he was one of the very big wealthy men. He had the biggest, I think, what is that thing called? Time-sharing business in the world. Something happened, because when the recession, then he kind of basically ended up losing most everything. You know, his private jet, his this and that. So he had this one house. It's there somewhere up in the... Oh, no, I think it's in Florida. I think in Miami. Outside Miami. I think that's where he lives. I think it's there. They call it Versailles. You know, not that they should, but it's a monstrous house. It's the biggest house by square footage, I'm not sure, of any house in America. It's the biggest house in America. You know, and I forget what it is. To finish it is $100 million. Right, so it'll be probably the most expensive house in America.
Yeah.
And so, but at the same time, he can't live there because he doesn't have the money to do it. So all his money is invested in there. But, you know, he can't get it out because who's going to buy the house? It's not like you built a house and, okay, then you sell the house.
Yes.
No one's going to buy that house. You know, who's going to buy it? Right? You know? So it's a waste. He can't enjoy it. So the Veda's point is that if the facilities that are generated by your economic development you can't enjoy, it's as good as not having them.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So let's say you have the man, And, you know, he's working all day, you know, 16 hours a day, flying around the world and this and that. So he has tons of money, but there's no family life. And the point of having money is so that there's a family and everything. So therefore, it's as good as not having it. So what's the point? No, but, you know, this way I'm making, you know, whatever it is, you know, $500 million a year. So what? Make $100 million a year and be happy with your family. So that's the differences in the Vedic, is that if all you could do to maintain your natural family lifestyle is 100 million, you'd stop there. You wouldn't go to 500 million, because of course you can always make a little bit more. You know what I'm saying? But you just, there's a limit where you stop, because the primary is your lifestyle. The secondary is the money to generate for that lifestyle.
Yeah.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai, Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhakti Vrinda ki.
Jai.
Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai. Jai